Turn your tax refund into new tile at Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Some things never go out of style, like tile from Mohawk. You can count on the durability, easy maintenance, and timeless beauty of tile. We carry a great selection of over 350 ceramic, porcelain, mosaic, and glass tiles to choose from. Head into Menards and let our helpful team get you everything you need for your tile project today. Save big money at
Menards. And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
One down the floor, Caravan trying to track it down, and he will. And it's over! Hail to the champions! Hail to Michigan! For the first time in 37 years, the Wolverines win the national title.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, straight from the boroughs. Today's Wednesday, April 8th. This is episode 227. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, share our pages, join our groups, comment. We want to hear from you. Tonight, we're going to put some final thoughts on the NCAA basketball season. We have a champion. We'll talk about the rest of the world of sports. We'll talk about some baseball, some NHL, some NBA, and we'll preview the Masters. Ah, a tradition like no other. The Masters is here. Getting ready to start tomorrow, but we'll start it off with NCAA basketball. Michigan is the champ. Darren, let's get going.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they pretty much steamrolled to the title, guys, right? I mean,
yeah.
They beat Howard by 20-plus. They beat a good St. Louis team. They pulled away from them. They routed Alabama, even though that was the closest to the games at 13, but they were up 16 late. They crushed Tennessee. They crushed Arizona. And they kind of, you know, had a good second half and kind of held Connecticut at bay, guys. I mean, hard to say they weren't the best team in this tournament easily. There was nothing that they kind of got lucky with. They were just a better squad, Kev.
I mean, the one stat that came out, you know, they were the first team ever to score 90-plus points in the first five tournament games.
Exactly.
Or any consecutive tournament games. You know, not just the first five. But, yeah, I mean, they were impressive throughout. Even when they played the final and they played at UConn's pace, they did enough to win. And like I said, the second half felt like they kept UConn at arm's length pretty much the whole way. Never felt like they were threatened to lose, even though it was still by the scoreboard close. You know, it felt like Michigan had that game in control. Gino,
yeah. Yeah, May's title in year two, second Big Ten title since 2000. So it's a long run between titles for them. They had three players, 6'9" or taller, that led their team in scoring, becoming the first team to do that. Michigan hit no threes in the whole first half of the game, which I thought was interesting. They went a whole half without hitting a three. You know, for me, listen, I thought it was an ugly game. UConn tried to control the tempo, you know, went back and forth. Kev?
You know, like you said, with the three-point shooting, though, you know, the second half, UConn was shooting that end, and they were, what? I mean, I don't know if they had a couple late, maybe, but they were, what?
Yeah, Mullins hit a couple late, but they struggled. They missed their first eight also, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, was it just playing I can't think of the name of the field.
Lucas Oil Stadium.
The sight lines, the depth perception, something was off because neither team could shoot a three.
They shot below 39% from the field in that game. 2 for 15 from three was Michigan. So, listen, it was kind of, for me, I thought it was kind of ugly. It was an ugly kind of game. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, game came down to a few plays to me, right?
Yep.
The hook and hold in the first half I thought was a little touchy. Listen, technically, by the letter of the law, you could call it, but it didn't seem like it was blatant. Nobody was getting hurt on it. They had both locked with each other. I thought that was a weird call, and it kind of took the lead away from UConn. Not saying UConn wins on any of these, by the way. I'm just saying that I thought was strange. Solo Ball picking up a horrible fourth foul. I mean, not horrible call, just horrible hit.
Horrible. Yes, it was.
Coming at him, kind of grabs him. It's like, so and that was at the 16-20 mark, and he was the only guard at the time hitting any shots. So I thought that was weird, and they had to sit him down.
With 16-20 left, Don't you give up the layup there?
Of course you do. You don't even contest it. You let him go. UConn cut it to six. They forced that turnover. Tarris Reed hits it ahead, and he runs down there, and he tips it back into play, and they missed the layup. Kenny comes down the court, hits the three. All of a sudden, instead of going to four, it goes to nine. And then the final one was down four. They get it back down to four again, and then Caravan takes a real quick three, which you didn't need at that time with a little over 20 seconds left. You probably could have just, passed it a little bit more, tried to get a better shot, or tried to take Caravan off of, a quick give and go type thing. Could have been a two even, because you're only down four at that point. Those are the four plays, and Connecticut needed all four of them, for them to have a shot to win. And that's how good Michigan was, Jay.
And the Caravan shot, especially because it wasn't that they were down three and the three ties. So, okay, fine. He's rushing to try to tie the game. No, they're down four. So even if he hits the three, you're still down. So, why rush that shot at that point? But listen, they tried to really get back into that game. They cut it all the way down to that point. They couldn't get past that point, though.
And, I thought the second half we were going to see gunplay. I mean, the physicality on the ball.
Yeah,
it was to UConn's advantage generally, but Michigan was given just as good as they got. McKinney was riding them all over the place, and I'm not saying that they were calling it the same for both ways, except for a couple of soft calls out of nowhere. You're like, really? But for the most part, I thought we were going to see a knife or a gun before they called a penalty, a foul. I thought it was a little bit. I thought, listen, you don't want the refs to take over. They didn't, except for that hook and hold, which I thought was dumb. But the referees were pretty consistent. G.
So UConn Duke wound up being the game, basically the tournament at that point. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the final four games, we got three games after that. Okay. UConn beat Illinois. It was an okay game. Wasn't a great game. Arizona gets blown out by Michigan. And then we get the final and, for the most part, Michigan's in there. They're in control the whole game. I mean, wasn't a great Final Four. That's my only takeaway from this. This year was just not a great Final Four.
The one thing I'll say, though, is that it was a better tournament than last year, where all the one seeds seemed to not have any trouble. It gave us a little bit of a feeling of lower seeds coming back. What we have to get used to is the fact that a Cinderella is going to be very rare now. It's going to be a major conference team that finished fifth or sixth in their league that is going to sit there and make that little run like Iowa did this year. It's going to be more of that, because there's going to be less Cinderellas that have a chance. And let's be honest, with the way we're paying for play now, there's already 1,500-plus players in the portal, okay? I mean, over 1,500. It's day two. They have 2 weeks of this. We're going to have 3,000 at least, guys. And, 300 teams times 15 players? I mean,
Whoever's graduating, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like almost everybody's going. Like St. John's, for us, on our side, we're locals. They only have one guy in the portal in Io who didn't even play, really. But they lose Ejiofor, Hopkins, Mitchell, Sellers due to eligibility. So they're already having to replace a bunch. And you don't know who else will stay if Prey stays or the other guys kind of stick in. Kev?
I know it's women's, but, Dawn Staley, I think, captures it right. When she talks to these people at the transfer portal, the first question is how much?
Yeah,
and if they don't fit in the budget, why even talk to them? And that's going to be I think the men's going to be the same thing. How much? If they don't fit in our budget, we can't even talk to you.
And, we said it last year after the tournament because it was so chalk last year. Is this what we're going to come to see now all the time? And you know what? For the most part, we saw it again. I mean, yes, it was better than last year. It wasn't as chalky. But, for the most part, it's these big teams. And after these, wherever you want to draw the line, 12 teams, 14 teams, after that grouping, it's going to be really hard, Darren, to get one of these other teams in there.
And just remember that there was a stretch, probably the last week of February, where UConn was a one.
That's right.
There was a long stretch where Illinois was a two. They never got up to the one level. So, I mean, it wasn't like either of these two teams were like out of left field. Illinois was ninth in the country, eighth in the country at stretches. UConn was a top two team. So, I mean, St. John's beating them twice, lowered them down. We thought that they got too high a seed and St. John's got screwed. In the end, UConn beat everybody they were supposed to beat. Hey, listen, Duke might have, you might say Duke gave the game away, or you might say UConn stole it from them. Either way, if you're a UConn fan, you're like, no, we just beat them. We grinded and we took it. And as much as I don't like Hurley, he found a way to do something to Michigan that no one else did. He controlled the tempo. He did. He gave his team a chance to win, and they just couldn't do it. But he gave them a chance to win with the style of play. So as much as I'm not a fan of his antics, he's a hell of a freaking coach.
They were able to play almost a Big East type of game.
That's a good point. I like that. You're right. You're right.
Grinded it out. And it wasn't even just a Big East game. It was an old school Big East game.
Yeah.
It was Georgetown and Syracuse, and the physicality and the nastiness. It was not a nasty game. There wasn't a lot of chippiness going on. But it was definitely physical, and the refs let them play, and that's where we sit. So we're going to see. What was that?
And kudos to Hurley about the handshake line. He let them celebrate, let them have their moment on the court. He made sure his players weren't going anywhere. They waited, and then everybody shook. Hey, listen, Kev, we've seen it too often where the stuff like this doesn't happen, and it's good to at least see it happen every once in a while, you know.
When Pitino lost to Duke, he made a great comment, right? He was like, listen, I get that we have to be here. He's like, you should have the losers go first so that the winners can have as much time as they need. And I actually kind of agreed with him. He wasn't saying it to be a jerk. He was, we're waiting here like 40 minutes, like a bunch of jerks here, almost an hour before you're interviewing us. He's like, well, just get us out of the way and let the winners do their celebration and come out. But I like the fact that Hurley did the respectful thing. Yeah, and listen, you know, the funny thing is, do you know guys know who had the number one spending, in NIL this year with school?
It was Michigan.
No, it was not.
No?
It was a team that did not make the tournament. Indiana was one.
Wow.
Auburn was 9. Those are the two top 10s that didn't make the tournament, okay? Michigan was 14, and UConn was 5. St. John's was 16, just to put it in perspective. But now, when you're talking about that level, Illinois is about $4 million ahead of Indiana, I should say, was $4 million ahead of everybody else. Everybody else starts getting close, so the difference between 5 and 14 is not dramatic.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying the way it fell. But Indiana had the highest NIL. They had $32 million. Michigan's, I think, was 26. Finished 14th, and UConn's, I think, was 28. St. John's was like 25. I mean, it was like one of those type of things. The only team that made the final four, or even I think the final eight that wasn't in the top 20, was Illinois, who used a lot of, they took a lot of guys from overseas and I guess didn't have to pay him as much. And because Iowa even finished in the top 20. But anyway, one last college basketball. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, you mentioned, Auburn. They were 9th, you said?
Yep.
So kudos to them and their program. They played the NIT. They actually won the NIT this year. I mean, good job of them to take it seriously and get through it and win. And, that might catapult them.
Absolutely.
It's just such a brutal conference. And not that the SEC was great this year because they didn't have one great team. They had a bunch of good – Florida was the best team.
Yeah.
And they were very good. They just weren't great. They started slow and then they beat the SEC, but you still don't know how good the rest of the SEC was. One other quick point, Gerald Daddio Patio, I don't know if you remember him from the late 80s at UNLV, passed away this week at the age of 60. He was on those early TARC teams with downtown Freddie Banks. And, they were a team that was, they were running gun before Loyola Marymount was running gun under those TARC teams, before TARC got Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony and
Casey Augman,
Moses Scurry and all the other guys, Augman, like you said. But that was the original team that UNLV, not the original, but it was like between the Sidney Green and the Larry Johnson team. That was the team in the middle. And, so Gerald Daddio Patio had passed at the age of 60. That's kind of what I have on it, G.
Any comment on the new UNC coach?
He's an NBA coach. He's used to coaching players that get paid.
Like Malone.
Well, that fits right into college now, doesn't it?
I mean, I don't think he'll be overwhelmed. And I think he's a good X's and O's guy. He's won where he's been. I can't imagine.
Won a championship with Denver.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So they got Malone and Belichick on campus? That's kind of funny, don't you think?
Yeah.
In a way, I think that's kind of funny.
It is. We're going to see more and more of this type of thing, I think. just because of the way it's going. Now, I know there was an executive order passed. I don't know enough about it yet, but as I read more on it, we'll see. I mean, I know it's 5 years eligibility and stuff like that. I just don't know how it's going to affect the NIL, but we'll
get can only transfer once apparently, and before you lose eligibility too. We'll see. We're going to see how this all goes.
Yeah, we're going to see how it shakes out. If it passes, if it's legal, we still got to go through all the court hearings on this stuff, but we'll see what happens.
Mr. Rez has not challenged already.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure it will be.
Yeah,
the first kid that wants to transfer for a second time, you know that's what it's got to be, but. We'll get more onto the portal and all the other fun stuff during the dead times of the summer, Jay. But right now, I mean, you know, we have a champion. Hail to the victors. Hail to Michigan.
Before we close out NCAA basketball, Kev, want to touch on the women's?
I apologize for the picks I gave last week. I was spot on. Kev,
you would have been 0-3.
I was 0-3. So Friday we had South Carolina beat UConn 62-48. Gino Auriemma. A little contentious after the third quarter there, complaining to Holly Rowe about the 6-0 fouls in the third quarter, complaining that Sarah Strong's jersey got ripped. Well, she ripped it herself. Complaining that Dawn Staley yells at the referees. Yeah, like a coach never yelled at the referee. and then the handshake line at the end, he said something to her, she said something back, and, you know, it just got ugly.
She didn't shake his hand before the game. Was that it, Kev? That she felt she didn't shake his hand before the game?
Yeah, I mean,
so he waited 2.5 hours to address it. You know, I don't know.
She shook everybody's hand well before the game, but when they do the introductions, he expects her to come at the introductions to shake hands, and I don't know.
I'm no Staley fan, but Gino's a baby. Even Pat Summitt hated him too.
Yeah. Yep. The other game was ugly. UCLA beat Texas in 51-44, ugly. And then the final game on Easter Sunday, talk about ruining my dinner. UCLA led 21-10 after one, and South Carolina never challenged. And South Carolina becomes the first team, men's or women's, to lose back-to-back championship games by 20 or more points.
Quick point, Kev.
Yep.
Did they struggle or the ugly game? You talked about two ugly games, Texas and South Carolina. Is that just the way UCLA plays? Are they going to make the game ugly, or was it just because of the gym and they just weren't hot and they couldn't
hit? Well,
I'm just curious because I don't watch it like you do. Gino certainly doesn't watch it like you do. So you would be the only one that could really answer if that UCLA style, or is it just a bad shooting game?
Especially the first one, UCLA Texas was just bad for both teams. I mean, Texas plays. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country. And I know UCLA is up there too, so it may have been Styles also causing the ugly game. The second one, I mean, UCLA held South Carolina to season low in points, field goal percentage, field goals made. I mean, it was just – I think South Carolina missed some early layups and then just never could put the ball in the basket.
I gotcha. I think sometimes, you get these new arenas and you get these new rims and you get these new balls. And the rims are bouncy. The balls are bouncy. You see weird rolls. There was one, I don't remember what game it was, in the men's game, though, where the guy put a layup in. And the ball was like, it looked like it was down. Then all of a sudden it bounced out and it like sat on top and then it rolled off. I don't remember who the player was, but it was like, wow. And then you'd see other ones where guys taking shots from Michigan where they're getting the roll. And I'm like, I don't know what the – wow. Because these rims, you can tell, are very bouncy. They're not used before. And it definitely affects shooting, in my opinion.
I mean, I think for UCLA, you know, 6'7", Lauren Betts helps there. And they also had Jaime Hawkins' sister played for UCLA, too. So
– yeah, no, it's good. Good height and good bloodline. That's really what it comes down to. Well, sorry for you in South Carolina, Kev.
Yep. See if they make it seven straight Final Fours next year.
Look at Kev trying to find the bright side.
That's right.
Love it.
All right. Let's touch on the world of sports. Let's go around. So NHL, we had a little local action going on. Islanders in a fight for the last playoff spot. Four to play, three back, if I'm correct, Kev.
Yep. Free and, fall. Everybody's now at four games left. And three points behind Philly in the Metropolitan. Also 3 points behind Ottawa in the wild card. Columbus and Detroit are between them. Last four games are all at home. Toronto, Ottawa, which is just massive. Montreal and Carolina. And, of course, losing four in a row, seven in the last ten. The big news was firing Patrick Waugh and hiring Peter DeBoer. Gino, what do you think of that move?
Well, listen, I don't like a coaching change this late in the year. You know, I read all the stuff, and the GM, Darshay. You know, he said it was the move to move the group forward. That was the quote. And I don't love it with four games left in the season to be making a move. Five games left in the season to be making a move like that. I don't like that at all this late, because at this point, what is a coach going to come in and do? Completely change the whole way they're playing with four games left? They played 78 games. You're going to, what, flip a switch now with four games? So I don't like it. If you told me he made it after the season, okay, fine. But, you know, for me, I think
Waugh was not Darshay's guy. He was Lamoriello's guy. And I think they wanted to get a jump before the hiring in the offseason. And you bring in Peter DeBoer. You know, he spent 3 years in Dallas, got fired. He reached three straight conference finals. Lost to Vegas and Edmonton twice. Before that, he was in Vegas for 3 years. Lost twice in the conference finals. Lost one other time in the conference finals. Lost two times in the Stanley Cup finals.
Yeah.
Okay, he has won the Stanley Cup, but I got conference finals or Stanley Cups, and he's losing at that late stages. Damn good coach. I think
that's the whole thing, Kev. Is that they needed to find they needed to beat people out for DeBoer,
which is why
what they're doing now is that with four games left, they're saying, "All right, we're going to throw a spark out there. It doesn't work. Who cares? We already shit the bed." You know, unless you thought Waugh was coming back, if Patrick Roth was coming back, great. But if you didn't think he was coming back, this move doesn't do anything to hurt them. Because he's got 3 years left after this. He's got four games in 3 years, from what I understand.
I believe so. Yeah.
Either three after this or four after this, but yeah, he's got many years.
So they signed him for the long term.
Yeah,
you know, again, this is a guy that I don't think he got fired from that. I think he stepped away, didn't he?
Or did he step away?
I might be wrong, but he got to the finals, and I think he. But then these guys always want to come back. I remember when he came up with the Devils as the coach, and all of a sudden he got them to the finals. They lost, but I mean, the guy has won where he's been. So maybe he's a guy that I don't know makes a difference for them. We'll see.
Yep.
I haven't seen that many goalie successful coaches in the past. We'll find out if this change will do something for the team.
I mean, Waugh wasn't bad while he was here. 97, 78, and 22. I mean, you want to tell me here's the thing, Kev, right? So 3-7 their last 10. If they're 7-3, which is four game difference, he's probably still coaching. Oh, it's like it's one of those things. Contract extension. You know, contract extension.
I'm just saying, because there's a chance. The thing is, this team has no choice. You said that the one game was really massive against Ottawa. All four. They have to get 8 points here and hope for the best.
Yeah,
that's it. That's all. You can't get six. You can't get five. You can't get seven. Even I think you need all eight to get there.
Yeah,
and that gets you to 97. And will that be enough?
We'll find out.
It would be out west, but it wouldn't be here.
Yes.
All right. Any other NHL points with three, four games left in the season, Darren?
Well, Devils fired Tom Fitzgerald after 6 years. Lots of talent, lots of playoff appearances. So, time to move on. And I think he assembled a pretty decent squad, but they've not been able to put it together. And I don't think he's made the moves at the deadline that have worked to get the Devils over the top. I thought that Jack Hughes has been outstanding since the Olympics, by the way. He's been great. And he's probably getting rooted for by everybody in America because, A, he's not going to hurt your team because he's not going to make the playoffs, and he's like little Captain America now almost. So the Devils are making the move. They need to be a team that they have enough talent that they should be regularly in the playoffs, and the fact that they haven't really been is something that stands out to me.
Yeah, Fitzgerald was one of my hidden gems.
Okay.
He was a long-time player, 17 years in the NHL.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
He was the first player to score two shorthanded goals on the same minor penalty in a playoff game back in 1993, the Islanders versus Pittsburgh.
That is awesome.
Wow. That's a hell of a feat, actually.
Yeah, that's not easy to do.
That's a hell of a feat.
Usually they're pretty tired to come right off the ice after they score.
It probably means the first one came like 30 seconds in.
Yeah. Well, Wes,
hold the face
off. Wow. Wow.
Great stat.
All right. Let's move over. You want to touch on the NBA? We got the Knicks coming down the stretch here.
Yeah, three games left. They're still third. They've won three in a row. The season ends the 12th. But the Knicks, you know, they're either third or fourth. And I think we're gonna hold off next week when we convene. We'll do a playoff preview for the Knicks at that point.
Yep.
Sounds like a good idea.
A couple of other things. The Lakers, Doncic and Reeves are both out for the rest of the season. Not that that matters for playoff positioning too much, but of course LeBron says, well, if they're not playing, we're playing OKC. Oh, all of a sudden my arthritis is bothering me. I have to sit out also. Mr. Load Management.
Yeah. I think he's getting upset that Cooper Flagg is becoming a new face of the league, by the way.
Yeah.
Because every time you look up, and listen, I don't watch the NBA. You guys know that much. I don't watch much of it, but it's hard to miss when you hear Cooper Flagg put up 51, and I didn't get to root for him last year because it was at Duke, and I won't root for Duke. But now he doesn't bother me, so I'm watching him play. It's pretty exciting stuff on these highlights, guys.
Yeah. And, you know, with this new rule, 65 games and more to win these postseason
MVP.
Awards.
Yep.
MVPs, et cetera. SGA has got 66 or 67. But the other front runners, Wemby still needs to play one more game. He's missing tonight with an injury. Jokic is at 63. They've got three games left. Doncic, like I said, is stuck at 64. Unless he makes a cameo, and they need to play at least 20 minutes, he'll miss out. So it might be SGA's MVP by default. Because nobody else can play 65.
Which is ridiculous, by the way.
And nobody else draws a foul like SGA. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, out west, the playoffs are set. The east, we've still got five teams. Atlanta, Toronto, Philly, Orlando, Charlotte, separated by 2.5 or 5-9, which is big. You don't want to be 7, 8, 9 with the playing games. And then out west, you know, Denver getting red hot. Winners of 9 in a row, 10-1. San Antonio last of that. They've won 12 of the last 13. 17 of the last 19. OKC last at that. OKC has won 18 of the last 19. So clearly, I mean, these three teams are all three are playing great going into the playoffs.
And Kev, remind me, so the six are in, seven plays eight for the seventh seed, and then nine plays 10, and the winner of that game plays the eight to see who's the eighth seed, right?
Well, yeah, the loser 7-8.
Right. That's what I mean. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So seven and eight, you've got two chances to win one.
Right. Got it.
9 and 10, you have to win two.
Got it. Okay.
And that's the tanking, good. You know, we saw the Kings last night up one late, commit a foul so they could lose. The NBA is the worst.
It's so bad.
Oh, my God. Listen, the fact that the Warriors aren't going to lose to the Kings who have nobody playing is hard enough. And then for the Kings to say, we don't want the win. Doug Christie should be fined. The GM should be fined. They should be thrown out of the freaking sport. It's a joke.
It is. It's a big joke.
Listen, we know NFL teams tank at the end of seasons, but it's not like the players ever don't try.
Yeah.
These guys are fighting for jobs because their seasons, their careers are going to last 3.5 years on the average. So they're out there freaking digging in, and you know, may not be the most talented guys, but, you know, they're doing it. I've never seen baseball. Yeah, you may play your minor league. These guys are trying. You know, not that they invite everybody up on September 1st like they used to. It's a more limited thing. Hockey, yeah. Man, I'm watching my Flames play Dallas into overtime last night. They got nobody on that roster. They're trying to win the game. They commit a four-minute penalty in overtime. You know, I mean, how long are they going to play 4-on-3? They finally gave up a goal with a little less than a minute to go. I'm like, Jesus, you can't high stick them there. But, you know, that kind of stuff. But the NBA is just it's easily the most pathetic in the leagues with this. I mean, they really just do a horrible job of it.
It's a tough issue that they're going to have to figure out how to fix. You know, unlike the other sports, though, that number one pick or number two pick in the draft could define your franchise for 5 years. Unlike the other leagues where it may or may not, But in the NBA, it can easily define, you know, very easily.
Yeah.
I got to be honest. I think that the four teams that don't make the playoff in the 7 through 10, the four teams that don't get through, they should have the biggest chance of getting the number one pick. And I know most people will disagree with that because they're good, but that's the player that puts them over the top. I think that they should have the highest percentage. I think listen, nobody goes to an NBA game to watch a bunch of guys that don't belong in the league or a bunch of guys foul to try to lose a game on purpose. When it's that blatant, you're like, Jesus Christ. I mean, listen, I don't care if you lose, but you know, but don't lose on purpose late. That's embarrassing.
Gotcha.
Just a thought.
Yeah. All right. Want to touch on some baseball real quick. We're only about what, 10, 12 games in?
Yeah, we're early.
Kev, Mets? Good.
Yeah, Kev, go ahead.
Sorry, Darren.
No, my bad.
Mets actually won a few games in a row there out in San Fran, the first game back here in Arizona before losing today. I think the biggest news was Soto going on the IL with the strained calf. The sort of thing the other night where they started in outfield with Young, Benj, and Beatty as a starting outfield, who had a total of 9 games of major league experience in the outfield. You know, the surprise so far has probably been, you know, at least for the first 2 weeks, Lewis Robert. 333, 478 on base. I mean, he's actually drawing walks. That's something he never did. I'm not buying it yet. I still have my doubts about him, but, you know, he's off to a good start. Vientos is off to a good start. Guys who are not, you know, Lindor, of course, off to a bad start like he normally does. Bichette's hitting 222. I didn't realize how much Bichette goes to right field almost every bat. If we still had a shift, I'd play my entire defense on the right side of the field. I mean, he never pulls the ball. I haven't seen him pull the ball once, I don't think. Simeon's hitting 209. Polanco's hitting 200. I have my questions about them having anything left. We'll see what happens. Like I said, it's only 2 weeks.
Too early. Mitch has
been there, except for Pearson. The starting's been there. The bullpen's actually been pretty good. You know, we'll see.
Darren, Yankees?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the question about the Yankees is the same question we've had. I expect Ben Rice to have a 1,400 OPS. I mean, this is the stuff I expect. He's down to 1,200. He struck out 3 times tonight. But the fact of the matter is that the bullpen is going to determine how far this team goes. We already see nervousness back there. You know, Doval looks like he doesn't have it. Bird looks like he doesn't have it. We'll find out. It's 2 weeks in. We'll see if they get themselves going. Bednar's been up and down, but he's been okay. Cruz has probably been the most consistent guy back there. The lineup, I mean, listen, we haven't seen Judge yet, Vintage at all. And, you know, you're not going to see all these guys, you know, hitting all at once. But they're 8-2. I mean, how angry can I really be? And, you know, again, you know, I like the Mets. The Yankees played the Giants too, and your pitching looks great when you play the Giants because they can't hit, even though they did a good job against the Phillies. You know, Schlittler's been outstanding. Fried has been very good. You like what you see from the rotation. Even Will Warren's been okay. He's been you know, respectable. Honestly, for the Mets, we're gonna find out if they hit enough outside of Soto, and for the Yankees, we're gonna find out if the bullpen holds up for them. That's really what it comes down to. It's so early; it's impossible to say what's going to really happen. But I expect Ben Rice to have an OPS of 14 and an on-base percentage of 550. I mean, we thought that going into the season. So it is what it is. Well, we'll see how it goes the rest of the way. Just want my fantasy team to be competitive. That's it.
Yep.
Any other baseball points, guys?
I have a few that go with my little my little hidden – and you have the hidden gems. I have the very
– hidden gems, yeah.
I'm confusing it. So let me just give you a couple. A few of them are baseball. I have one golf and a couple of football, actually. So, Kev, you remember vividly, and I'm being serious when I say this, Joel Youngblood did the unthinkable by getting 2 hits for 2 different teams in 2 different cities on the same day back in August 4, 1982. Do you know who he got the hits off of?
I was going to say Mets and Expos, right?
Yeah. You know who he got the hits off of? I had to throw the curveball at Kev because I know Kev knew the answer to the first part. Ferguson Jenkins and Steve Carlton.
I was going to say Carlton.
Wow. Famous. I'm just saying, you know, I think it's an interesting fact. Speaking of Carlton, you know, we all know the 1972 Steve Carlton, 27-10 year. The team won 59 games total. Yeah. Steve Carlton won 46% of the games, the highest in history. He was 27-10. The rest of the Phillies were 32-82. Speaking of the Phillies, first franchise to give up 200,000 career hits. They were very bad for a long time.
They were.
That's out of the WizKids year for a year or two. That was about it. Masters fact, and this is just a fun one. In 1998, Tiger won by 12. You guys remember that?
Yep.
Yes. In
1999, Jack beat Tiger, finished tied for sixth. Just thought it was interesting. Tarris Reed, right? Saw him this week. Played for Connecticut, finished second. So the last four championships have been won by either Connecticut or Michigan. He's played on only those two teams. He has zero of the championships.
There goes one of my buried treasures. Time.
He was on.
They were one of mine.
One, and he was on Michigan when Connecticut won there too.
Wait, Darren, we had the same source on that one.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to steal anything from you. Quick NFL thing, and it's not really NFL, but it's more of a wrestling thing. In a dusty Iowa high school gym in 2017, Tyler Lindenbaum pinned Tristan Wirfs in a sudden death overtime period at the Iowa high school state championships. Today, their combined NFL contracts total $221.6 million.
Wow.
They against each other in the wrestling. I thought that was pretty cool. And the last little football fact, just because it's not out yet, but it'll be out soon. The entire NFL schedule used to be done by one man, Val Pinchbeck. He'd go to work for 10 to 12 hours a day from mid-February to mid-May. He did this for nearly 30 years, from 1971 to 1998. He did it by himself with just his own algorithms with the things on the board. It was be a job that both of you and I would kill to have.
Yes.
This guy for 27 absolutely. Years, lone guy in a room without a computer doing the entire NFL schedule. And those are, I think that's all I got. Those are my buried treasures for the week, guys.
Yep.
Kev, do you have any other hidden gems before we move on to the Masters?
Yeah. Players with two home runs in the Major League debut before this season happened five times. Bob Niemann in 51. Bert Campanaris in 64. Mark Quinn in 99. J.C. Arencibia in 2010. Trevor Story in 2016. It's happened twice this year. It's happened only five times. Chase DeLauder back on March 26th. And Jose Fernandez of Arizona on March 31st.
I don't know how I missed that last one. I knew about DeLauder. I didn't realize that one.
I heard it today when I was watching the Mets game.
Okay, good enough.
Saturday night, Zach Nido. Leadoff home run. Angels win 1-0. 32nd time now since 1900. That leadoff home run, 1-0 final. Probably also the only time that the player on the team robbed three home runs to save the shutout. See Joe Adell.
That was awesome.
So it brings up a good point, though, Kev. So I saw the first two. He jumped up. Glove went over the wall. He pulled the ball in. Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
The third one is down the right field line.
A little short wall.
Short wall, and he goes over the fence into the stands, and they called it an out.
He started in the field of play and carried him into the stands. But yeah, I
thought it was a home run at first, and then they explained what you just said, Kev. I thought it was a home run, though.
So,
I
Kev,
it should be home. I know I thought it was a home run.
Okay, all right, so did I.
I would have thought home run.
I was always under the impression you had to keep the ball in the field of play to prevent the home run. If the ball is in your glove and your glove goes over the fence, it is a home run, whether you're with the glove or not.
Right.
I always thought that if you caught it in the field of play and you happen to fall over the fence, they would still call it an out. But if you had to reach into the crowd to catch it, it's a home run. And to me, he's into the crowd.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like to me also. It looked
like to me, but again, they were raving about the catches. I was like, oh, there's a home run. Oh, that's an out. Okay.
No.
didn't know.
yeah, last year, Jacob Young and Fernando Tatis tied with four home run robberies. So Odell needs one more to equal last year's.
I can't imagine he won't get it.
Tuesday night, minor league game. It was cats against dogs. The New Hampshire Fisher Cats against the Portland Sea Dogs.
We've been to Portland.
We have. 30 years ago, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's how old we are.
Sea Dogs were up 2-0 after the first inning. New Hampshire's second inning. Walk, walk, wild pitch, strikeout, sacrifice, fly. So there's two outs, one run in. Walk, 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 2-2. They pull the starting pitcher. In comes Jorge Juan in relief. Hit by pitch, wild pitch, walk. Hit by pitch, wild pitch, walk, walk. He comes out. The reliever comes in. Wild pitch brings in the eighth run of the inning. What have I not mentioned?
A base hit.
A base hit. A two-run single finally brought in the ninth and tenth runs. 10 runs, one hit in the inning.
That's unbelievable. Wow.
And so Hayden Mullins, 1 2/3, the starting pitcher, no hits, 5 runs, 5 walks. Jorge Juan, no innings, no hits, 5 runs, 3 walks, 2 hit-by-pitches.
Jeez. Oh, my God.
Only 16 times in Major League history has a pitcher gone 1 2/3 or less, giving up no hits and 5 runs. It happened twice in the same inning in the minor leagues. No major league team has scored greater than 4 runs before the first hit of the inning. And they put up 8 before getting their first hit.
That's unbelievable.
31 minutes of watching walk, walk, walk. Felt like it was
watching Bad Little League.
Yeah. One NHL point. I'm going to give you the entire list of players with 21 point per game seasons. Sidney Crosby.
Is that it, Kev?
20. I can't believe, at first, I can't believe Crosby's been around 21 years.
And I know you're a big fan of his.
Big, huge fan of Cindy. But 21 years of consistently point per game. I mean, just incredible career.
No, awesome.
And those are my gems.
All right. We are moving on to the Masters. It is the 90th edition, Augusta National, Augusta, Georgia. They start tomorrow. Scottie Scheffler goes in as the number one player in the world. Returning champ, Rory McIlroy. Any thoughts to start this off, guys? Any thoughts, Kev?
It's the Masters. Yeah, I mean, Scottie, you know, he hasn't played in 3 weeks. First time he's done that going into the Masters. And a little thing got in the way called, you know, a birth of a child about 9 days ago. Hasn't been playing great, but I wonder if, you know, becoming the dad again was on his mind. I mean, you know, it's a Masters. You can't count on Scotty. He has to be up there. Rory with the monkey off his back last year. Let's see if he can play well again. Interesting thing I read today, guys like Bryson DeChambeau is out there. 3D printer of his five iron. If it passes PGA inspection, he's going to use a 3D printed 5-iron.
Wow.
Quick point on Rory. I asked him about, because he gets to pick the dinner this year, and they said, Rory, how come you don't have more of an Irish, you know, flavor to it? He goes, well, I wanted to enjoy the meal too.
Corned beef and cabbage wasn't going to be enough with a boiled potato?
Sorry, Kev, I just figured that that line happened. That line made me laugh. I didn't expect them. I didn't expect it to say.
The Irish 7-course meal, a baked potato and a 6-pack? Come on.
They could have went right for it, and nobody would have said boom.
Darren, what are your thoughts about this?
You know what? I mean, I actually think it's going to be – listen, Justin Rose in this tournament, he can come out of prison or come out of the hospital and finish in the top 10. He's just that kind of guy that plays well on this course.
What do you think? Is Tiger Woods coming out of prison?
Tiger, you know, well, John Daly's
been arrested. That's a tough one, Kev.
Daly's been arrested less for DUIs than Tiger. We'll put it that way.
Yes, he has.
I kind of like Gino's A-Berg, or as the rest of us call him, O-Berg, in this tournament. I think that he's a guy that seems to be playing well at the right time. I think Fleetwood is starting to play pretty well. I know it's a Kev favorite, so I'm not saying anything that Kev isn't going to pick. Gary Woodland has been kind of kind of starting to hit the ball well. It's not his kind of course normally, but you never know. And I think Højgaard's another guy that's been really playing well in Europe. So those are guys I'm looking at. I mean, listen, we just want a good leaderboard on Sunday. We want a competitive mat. We want to be watching it down the stretch on Sunday where people have to make big putts. They have to get through Amen Corner. They got to do all the fun stuff to win this tournament. It's the Masters. You still get the egg salad sandwich for $1.50. Yeah. But the scalp tickets cost you like $25,000. It's a very interesting dynamic. G?
Yeah. Listen, it's a tournament where you expect going into at least Saturday that a lot of the bigger players are in the top 10. Maybe you sprinkle in a couple of guys that you don't expect. But going into Saturday, I always feel like, you know, five of the top 10 players going into Saturday are exactly who we thought should be in the top 10.
Yep.
You know, for a lot of people, including myself, this is the first big tournament you're going to watch. So, you know, you got me on who you think could come out and play. I mean, I think Scotty will wind up playing well. You know, does Rory come back off last year and play a second straight Masters? You know, got me. I mean, do you want to go with Cam Young, who is the winner of, Kev, what was the tournament he just won?
I don't know.
Slipping my head. But, you know, the last two winners of the Masters won that tournament before. It's Cam Young. If you want to go that way, do you think it's somebody like Matt Fitzpatrick? Is it one of the LIV guys? I mean, you know, that's kind of the different things you could play.
Fitzpatrick was one of the ones I was looking at. You know, yeah. He's actually pretty good. Ninth at Phoenix, 14th at Pebble, second at the Players, won the Valspar. So he's been playing well this year so far. I like Fitzpatrick, especially the odds were pretty good on him.
He's like 23.5 to 1 or something like that, right, for Fitzpatrick?
Yep. I think what's going to be interesting, though, you got to make sure, you know, the last couple of years we've had some cooler, rainy, damp weather at times at the Masters. This week, I mean, it's starting off 71 on Thursday, 77 Friday, and mid-80s over the weekend without any rain. So those greens are going to get nice and firm. It'll be a nice challenge.
Put on glass. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we want to see. We want to see them challenged on the Masters. We want the shots that if you make a great shot, hey, you're going to, you know, some of those par fives, you know, 13 and 15, you got a chance for a couple of eagles there, but you can be in Race Creek awfully quick. You know, you hit the wedge roll, and all of a sudden you're rolling back into Race Creek and you're getting a seven.
Yeah, there's certain things you want to see. At the Masters, you want to see fast greens. Like the U.S. Open, you want to see thick rough. I mean, there's certain things you want to see. You want to see challenges to the players. Again, I mean, I think Gino pointed out last year, you know, you don't want to see the best players in the world shooting five over. But you do want them to be – you do want it to be competitive where, you know, you have to play a good round to win it. And that's kind of what we bank on here. And I don't think anyone's going to win with five over ever at the Masters anymore. But you know, you want to see it where it's competitive. And you got to – and we want a good leaderboard. That's really what it comes down to, Jay.
With the good weather, I would expect the greens to be really fast.
Yep.
You expect this course to be extremely challenging anyway. So, you know, put those two together, see what you get. You know, as far as betting, I say this every time there's a golf tournament that I'm betting on. I like to take guys to try to finish in the top 10, take two or three guys, put a little money down on each one. Maybe you hit two instead of, you know, if you're just picking a champion, you know you're only going to hit one. You know, that being said, Justin Rose plus 270, I kind of like that. If I'm really starting to get outside the norm, Cameron Smith at plus 590, Dustin Johnson at plus 1050, and that's to finish in the top 10. So, and that's, you know, outside. Kev, I got a little bet for you, though, and that is you could take a LIV player to win the Masters at plus 335. Now, remember, that gives you Rahm and DeChambeau. So it's not the worst kind of bet. You get a couple of golfers that are up there. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you five parlay top 10 finishers. So Rahm and Scheffler at plus 180. It's one of my favorites. Yep. Xander Schauffele and Cam Young at plus 520. Kev, you like Fitzpatrick? Fitzpatrick and Justin Rose at plus 850. And that's his top 10. I like that, right? You kind of like that one too, right? Justin Thomas, that's a way out one. To finish in the top 10 is plus 400. I kind of like that. I think that's got a shot. And then three guys. And I took basically three of the big favorites. So Scheffler, Rory, and DeChambeau to all finish in the top 10. And that's at plus 580. So I kind of like that, except show me a tournament that the three of them have finished in the top 10 and you're not going to come up with many, which is the issue. So just a couple. Darren, you mentioned the food. Prices are ridiculous there for tickets. The food is just ridiculously underpriced. You could have a chicken salad on wheat, Darren, for $3.
I can't even do that at my house.
Kev, you want a domestic beer? It's $6, Kev.
Wow.
And the price is up.
And, of course, the famous pimento cheese sandwich, $1.50.
But you can't bring your cell phone in. Because
they can't bring your cell phone. You have to check your phone.
Yep.
It's one of the few events left where you got to check your phone to get in.
They don't care.
They don't.
You don't want to be. And if you do anything out of line, they toss you immediately.
Yep.
That's a couple of my bets. Any other closing comments on the Masters, guys?
Like you were saying, G, we just want to get the right players on the leaderboard down the stretch. This is the kickoff to golf. The weather's going to be beautiful. So therefore, people will think about the outside. It's going to be warm here as well. So in the Northeast, so people will be trying to get on the course next week after watching the Masters this week. I think.
Yeah.
I think Olberg's going to win this. I don't know why. I'm going to go with him to win it. Listen, I don't count out Rory or any of the other guys, Scheffler, any of those guys. But I don't know why. I just think Olberg's got a shot here. So we're going to see what happens.
Olberg, okay. 17-1 to win, plus 320 for a top five, plus 154 for a top 10, Darren.
It's not bad.
No, it's pretty good. If you like him, top five, plus 320 is a pretty decent bet.
Exactly. I'm going to throw it in there in a parlay with somebody else and see if I can make some money.
All right. That's all I got for the Masters.
Any other points, gentlemen, before we wrap up?
Nope.
Okay, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we try to talk about baseball and nothing's really happening, so we just kind of muddle through it. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We post a lot on social. Please like what we post. If you don't like it, pretend you like it. Share it. Get it out to other people. We want more listeners. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Big refund, big project, big savings at Menards. Turn your tax refund into your next big project. That patio you've been dreaming of is more affordable than you think when you do it yourself. Get free estimates fast using our landscaping design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on the largest selection of concrete landscaping blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money on your interior stains and finishes now at Menards. Provide exceptional color to your staining project with Minwax Color Series. It applies evenly and dries fast with just one coat. Get a quart of Minwax Color Series wood stain in over 240 colors. On sale now through April 12th. Visit our paint desk and let our helpful team get you everything you need for your stain project today.
Save big.